could see it coming on for miles, ripping up the trees and fence post styles. The wind goes warm, the sky.
Batten down the hatches. The hurricane season is due to start, and this week on Jet Streaming, we'll talk about the new hurricane predictions and latest research into the models forecasters use to track these fierce storms. Plus, we'll say goodbye to a longtime National Weather Service employee. All of that on Jet Streaming. This is Jet Streaming, a podcast on weather and climatology from Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Kathy Werzer, along with fellow weather aficionados, climatologist and meteorologist, Dr. Mark Seely, and Craig Edwards, meteorologist here at Minnesota Public Radio. Good to have you guys in studio again.
Good morning, Kathy.
Always nice to fun to be here.
Thank you. Well, one of the big stories of the week, of course, the hurricane season predictions issued by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Mark calls for 17 tropical storms, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And what, 7 to 10 could become hurricanes, they think?
That's right. And I think something like 3 to 5 in the categories 3 to 5.
So an active hurricane season, potentially. We won't know.
Certainly more active than last year.
Yeah, the dire predictions didn't exactly pan out last year.
I always wondered how they come up with those long-range seasonal forecasts, whether it's weighted towards what they're seeing with the climatology information and how the oceans and jet streams are laying out. So always intrigued by those long-range predictions for the hurricane season.
NOAA is going to use a new hurricane model this season, and joining us is Dr. Naomi Sergi. She is at NOAA's Environmental Modeling Center of the National Weather Service, and she's heading up the effort to develop the next generation hurricane modeling system, and she joins us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
What problems are you trying to solve with this new model, Doctor?
Well, we have done a lot to improve track forecasts over the past three decades. We've literally reduced our 3-day track error by more than 50%, and continue to do so out to 5 days now. But we still have the hard-to-forecast track scenarios, the more erratic tracks, such as the storms that stall, like Hurricane Mitch did in 1998, the storms that do the loop-de-loops, like Hurricane Ophelia and Hurricane Alicia way back in the 80s. And so those are the difficult-to-forecast storm scenarios. We have to really start advancing our skill for intensity forecasts. So we need to know where the storm is going, how strong it's going to be there when it gets there, which is the intensity problem, and also how big the storm is going to be, and that's the structure problem. So improving intensity and structure, also rainfall, how wet the storm is, how fast it's moving. These are really our next generation forecast problems that that this model has been designed to address.
Have you tested it out yet?
Oh, yes, we have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, this model has been under development here for the past 6 years. And in fact, as we speak, we're going through the last of the formal pre-operational implementation testing, in that we're running this model for 3 full hurricane seasons. So for all of 04, all of hurricane seasons 05 and 06. And we run on a very, very large number of cases to make sure that we capture all the interannual variability of the storms in any few seasons. There are some seasons in which we have more storms that form in the very, very deep tropics right off the coast of Africa. We typically refer to them as Cape Verde hurricanes. There are other seasons, and in fact, 05, although it was a record-breaking season in terms of actual numbers, most of those storms either formed in the Caribbean or in the more western-type Atlantic, and there are actually no hurricanes that season that formed in the very, very deep tropics. And so the point here is We put this model before we declare it operational through rigorous testing to make sure that it is showing skill for all the different forecast scenarios that it will encounter in its lifetime.
Naomi, Mark Seeley here, and I was intrigued that one of the features it relies on is Doppler-borne radar.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, operationally speaking, how would you, or what would be the timeline and criteria to deploy the airborne Doppler radar to enhance this hurricane forecasting?
Our plan is to deploy NOAA's aircraft just as soon as it's declared a depression, and that's extremely important for us. The initialization of the storm is critical in the early stages. This is the time the forecasters are saying, is this storm going to intensify? And in fact, it is the weaker, more asymmetric and diffuse circulations that we typically have more of a problem in initializing in the model, because we're not quite sure the balances and structure with these diffuse circulations. So we will start deploying NOAA's aircraft just as soon as the Hurricane Center says, hey, we think we've got some kind of closed circulation there. So if it's in the Eastern Atlantic, we'll get the planes out to Barbados and or St. Croix and fly out of there. Or otherwise, you know, we'll be flying out of MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, where NOAA's planes are housed. And along with the Air Force. Making use of real-time airborne Doppler radar winds is a tremendous advancement for the hurricane forecast problem. And actually, no one else in the world is doing that. And this is a tremendous advancement over the model that we are replacing, to be able to really define the storm in terms of not only intensity but structure from the very top of the storm right down to the bottom. So it's really the first model that's going to have its real analysis of what this storm looks like at T equals zero.
This is Craig Edwards, and it was very satisfying to be a NOAA employee in 2005 with the outstanding predictions from the Hurricane Center. It was just an exceptional year, but I do remember back in the earlier years when these storms would wobble and the statements would come out, and they say the steering patterns are weak, and it was very uncertain where the storm was going, and it was very problematic, and that's just the way the storm was. Now, this new computer model, is this going to be made available to the private meteorologists? I know that there's some discussions that go on with the hurricane forecast information that the private sector, specifically a couple large private sector organizations, try to have their own hurricane tropical weather expert, and they're adding their value to the PathCast. Is there pretty good coordination between the private sector and the government, the NOAA forecasters, on delivering unified information, particularly during the most dangerous storms?
What I do know is this, and I don't deal with the public directly like that, but I do know that this data gets made available instantaneously through the main network in Weather Service headquarters, through the gateway. So it's made available to the public through the GTS as soon as the model run is finished.
How will you evaluate the success of this model, Naomi?
Two very important parameters. In terms of the track, and also in terms of intensity.
Now, last year, the very minimal tropical storms, after a prediction that came out that said 2005 was bad and the ocean temperatures are very high, it looks like it's going to be a very active year. And then there wasn't much to hang a hat on when it came to tropical storms. And I suppose that was sort of disconcerting when you're trying to run computer models to enhance the accuracy of the hurricane forecast, and you really didn't have many systems last year that you could monitor and see how the system was performing.
Right, which is exactly why we ran it, you know, for three full hurricane seasons, because we had all the storms from 04. A lot of those storms were very deep tropical storms. We had Ivan, we had Francis, we had Lisa, we had Jean. And 2005 really gave us a tremendous variety of storms. 06, although the numbers weren't high in actual storms, they were different kinds of storms. So it added more variability to the mix.
Naomi, I just thought of one follow-up I wanted to ask you about. You've talked about the new forecast model. showing improved forecasts of both the tracks and the intensity of the storm. But one other attribute of hurricanes that has a great impact and can amplify the storm damage as well as mortality is storm surge duration, which I understand is really tightly bound with the structure of the storm. Has there been improvement in forecasting that particular attribute of hurricanes?
We're working towards it, and I'm glad you raised this point. Coastal inundation is foremost on our checklist of issues to address. One of the things we're immediately doing is we are coupling to a wave model, which is actually operational within Weather Service, has been for the past 6-7 years. This is a special version of the Wave Watch, which is going to scope and have very high resolution around the hurricane and move with the hurricane. The damage in New Orleans was certainly due to storm surge, but the coastal battering, if you went along, drove along Alabama and Mississippi, where there were no buildings left standing, that was due to the battering waves. So the coastal inundation problem is twofold. It is the storm surge, but it's also the waves on top of storm surge. The waves we have found through a lot of research and observations we took several years ago, the waves actually also alter the energy from the ocean into the storm, which really impacts the structure of the storm. And getting back to your point now, the structure of the storm is extremely important in driving our next generation storm surge model. So we have a scientific plan of all the advancements we are going to make, including directly coupling to the waves to help us improve the structure. And then in another 4, 5, 6 years, we will be coupling then to an advanced storm surge model to be able to, and we've done some preliminary experiments, actually. We did some experiments with Katrina and the storm surge. In looking how this, how some preliminary results are coming out with this. So we are coupling to a new ocean model. That is a three-dimensional ocean circulation model. We will also be, with the ocean model, ingesting ocean observations in real time to be able to define where those hot spots are in the Gulf of Mexico, you know, Katrina and Rita. Intensified as it moved over the warm core eddies. We're going to get our planes out ahead of storms entering the Gulf of Mexico to define better those little hot spots or any important ocean circulation features. So, and then coupling with the waves, all of this is really to improve the forecast for intensity and structure in a lot of detail leading up to driving the storm surge model. Because the advanced storm surge model, it will be in very high resolution, and if you don't have very, very accurate and detailed forcing with a good deal of accuracy, you can get very, very detailed information that could be very, very wrong. So it is a plan to upgrade a little piece at a time and verify that and continue to advance the model leading up to addressing the full coastal inundation problem.
Interesting work, fascinating work, and we really appreciate you joining us here. We wish you the best.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Absolutely. We've been talking to Dr. Naomi Sergi. She's with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Specifically, she's at NOAA's Environmental Modeling Center.
When I'm in the far old land, the storms are on the ocean, the heavens may cease to be, this world may lose its motion, love, if I prove false to thee.
When you ask a little boy or girl, what do you want to be when you grow up? You don't often hear meteorologist. The exceptions being the people in this studio, including our next guest. Rich Neistat has been with the National Weather Service for 41 years?
That's correct, Kathy.
Wow. Starting in Los Angeles and concluding his long career in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, we just could not let him walk off into the sunset without sitting him down and swapping some stories with him. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What's it been like to watch how forecasting has changed in the past 40-some-odd years.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. I was thinking back the other day, and I remember giving a talk a few years back about my 10 most interesting forecast challenges, and every one of them was a wrong forecast. But the last of those actually was back in the 1980s. And since the 1980s, you have to realize that encompasses the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But in the 90s and since 2000, the advances we've made, our understanding of the science, the models, even the way we've been able to communicate what we think is going to happen to the public has changed dramatically.
Rich is a science officer that I had the good fortune to work with for a number of years.
Did you hire him?
No, Rich was there, okay. And he didn't have a choice about who his boss was going to be. So we had a great relationship, and I really enjoyed his humor, keeping things in focus, at the same time enjoying the job and the career as a meteorologist. He's just been an outstanding trainer of people and meteorologists, both with the private sector and our employees, that he's worked with the universities and St. Cloud State. And more importantly, he's helped our meteorologists advance their knowledge and understanding of the science. And one of the great tools that we had implemented 5 or 6 years ago was called a warning event simulator. And it's sort of like Rich having to sit in the cockpit, which each meteorologist about 11 times, and he had to review data and data and data, going through the same scenario patiently with 11 meteorologists. And he's done that for about 5 or 6 years, but it's really paid off with the skill in forecasting. Rich, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, I think the simulator, it's very similar to the way pilots train. And that's something that I dreamed about all through the 1990s. I said, I'm not going to retire till I get something like a simulator to be able to look back, because those who can't learn from history are destined to repeat their mistakes.
Yes.
And we got the weather simulator in 2001, and twice a year, as Craig alluded to, it's pretty laborious, but it's really challenging. We're able to keep the training relevant, focused. The employees absolutely love it, especially when it's one-on-one, which is, again, a lot of work, but it pays huge dividends. We're able to go back through tornadoes, through flash floods, through severe weather, see what we could look at. And I guess the best thing is we're able to take the latest thinking in science, integrate it into the training program, and be able to apply it. You know, if you have a very vague principle, but you're not able to see specifically how you would use it, it's very, very tough to incorporate it in day-to-day operations. And I think one of the greatest thrills for me has been to help the employees learn this, provide some of the training. And I'll walk in there in the last year and I would say, gee, I can't believe you're looking at that. Why would you look at that? It seems to be helping you, but where did you ever get that from? And they would turn and say, you're the one who taught us this.
Oh, see. Yeah. What was, when you look back on 41 years of forecasting, we all have moments where we look back and think, wow, that was a hair raiser. Do you look back and what storms really pop out for you?
Well, I think some of the early surprises in the Twin Cities. I moved into my house on Lindale Avenue in Minneapolis back on June 20th of 1974. It's known in the meteorological annals as Black Thursday, a thunderstorm. And it wasn't because my forecast wasn't totally correct, but it certainly blackened my reputation early on. But it was because the sky turned black at high noon. All the streetlights came on. The moving van was in front of my house, was moving into our first house. The huge cottonwood was just about bent over. And I thought, there goes the house on my very first day. And you know what the probability of rain was that I'd put out in the midnight shift? 20%.
Oh, Rich.
The proverbial 20%.
Oh, well. At least you had it in there, though.
Well, Rich has been very kind to me over the years. One of the first people I met at the Weather Service when I moved here in the 70s was Rich, and used to spend a couple of days a week at the forecast office when they were out at MSP International. But, you know, what I'm curious to ask you, and I'll bet there's people out there that have heard you over the years, too. 41 years. Now, despite the deployment, the modernization, all the technology that's come into play the last two decades, how valuable do you think experience is in terms of being a good forecaster?
Experience is huge, but one of the great things with the weather event simulator that we were talking about is we can take experience, like my experience, 41 years, and meld it into a case and replay that to the newer generation and take them through five storms, and it's probably worth 5 years of experience right there. It's something that we didn't have back in my day when I first started out. We had paper maps.
That's right. You know, what is it about this art and science, about meteorology, that has kept you going all these years?
I think it's the fascination with the unknown. You know, it's always trying to get it right. There's always something where we can improve a little bit more. It's the successes. It's just like a doctor with a patient. Yeah, you might diagnose a patient who has pneumonia, but the pneumonia is a little different in patient A and patient B. And sometimes there's a little bit of surprise, and sometimes there's great successes.
Where do you think meteorology is going as you leave this field in the next even 5-10 years with technology the way it is?
I think we're going to higher resolution forecasts, more accurate forecasts, a better understanding of storms. It's really hard to know the future, and I think one of the things that we've really stressed, and it's been helpful, the academic community, my supervisors, that type of thing, is that we're really trying to reach as far as we can in the scientific community and bridge the gap into operations and the understanding. The technology is certainly helpful, and that's going to help a lot in terms of the radar. But we got our Doppler radar back in the mid-1990s. It was actually worked on at the National Severe Storms Lab back in the 70s. But one of the things about the Doppler radar is it can interrogate a storm, or we can interrogate a storm with it. But often, looking for the clues, we're like looking for the needle in the haystack. And what we've been able to do with the meteorological community is know which haystack to look in. There's great challenges ahead, and I think there'll be great improvements.
Well, we are so proud of you. Thank you so much. Best of luck. Best of luck to you, and thanks for your many years of mostly accurate forecasts.
Thanks, Kathy.
He is going to be missed. Hard role to fill there at the National Weather Service.
Now, maybe we should allow Rich, you guys, to select the weather website of the week. What do you think? That's our version, Rich, of a drum roll.
Oh,
think?
I thought that was thunder, and I didn't know if that was a 20% thunder. Or... Anyway, my favorite website,
yes.
I'm a little biased, is weather.gov/TwinCities. And one of the things, if I can just plug it a little bit, that we started toward the tail end of Craig's career, and he certainly had a very instrumental part in, along with our focal point, was the institution of the Graphical Hazardous Weather Outlook. So we're highlighting the possibility of severe storms, oftentimes accurately, 5 days in advance. And it's graphical. My daughter, who goes to school in Wisconsin, said, I wish every office in the country had this. She said, it's so easy to use. It's the one picture is worth 1,000 words.
It is great. Good selection there. Thank you so much. By the way, next week we'll talk about storm spotting and the importance of trained spotters. We had a listener ask us to look into that. Plus, we'll talk with the gentleman from the Kansas City National Weather Service office who took some amazing photos of the Greensburg tornado. That's next week on Jet Streaming. Thank you so much, Rich, Craig, and Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy, and best wishes to Rich in his retirement.
Yeah, have a good day. Rich, you're the best.
If you have a comment or question, drop us a line at minnesotapublicradio.org. Thanks to Larissa Anderson, producer of this podcast. I'm Kathy Werzer for Jet Streaming. Thank you. Remember to keep your eye on the sky. We'll visit next week.
Waiting for the end, not knowing when. May the wind take your troubles.